Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to it. Welcome to Tuesday. We are here Tuesday all the day long. Sometimes we call it Taco Tuesday. Hit me some of that.
But more importantly, y'all know what today is, right? It's
Although I will be honest with you, as much as I love the Taco Tuesday Speedy Gonzalez sound effect, there has been a movement afoot in the Right Side staffing to declare this Tater Tuesday. I don't know if we're going to go there or not, but just
I'm always down for some taters too.
Barbecue stuffed taters.
Yes, yeah.
We'll let that lay for right now. But right now, it's Taco Tuesday. So anyway, welcome to it. We're glad you're with us. And that would be JP on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you doing today?
I'm good. You've recovered from the weekend of football.
Yeah, a little bit. I've, let it settle and got some more patience. And,
took a timeout.
Didn't rush to Twitter right after the game like a lot of Alabama fans did.
Never a good idea.
You gotta take a
never
breath.
Rush to Twitter when you're emotional.
No.
Never
do that.
All right, listen, we got a great show lined up for you. Coming up at 3 o'clock, we got a guy who's going to be in studio with us. Pretty excited about this. His name's Nicholas Schell. Nick is a student at Jacksonville State University. He's also the chapter president for Young America's Foundation, the organization headed by former Republican Governor Scott Walker, very tied in with people like Ben Shapiro and others. But Nick Schell is going to be in with us at 3 o'clock to spend some time talking about Gen Z, which reminds me, I got a triple dipper, so hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First one, in conjunction with our conversation with Nick Schell from YAF, we're going to talk about Gen Z busy. Gen Z is busy. Oh, by the way, do not think for a second that the up-and-coming generation has not got it going on, because they do. And they think in both sides, like every other generation does. There's liberals, there's moderates, and then there's conservatives. But where are they in terms of this vote? What are we going to see in this particular vote? We're going to talk about Gen Z getting busy with Nicholas Schell, and then also some other resources that I've got to add to the fray. So that's number one, Triple Dipper, Gen Z busy. Number two, y'all, I don't know if you're tracking or not, but there is a major scandal coming out of the Biden-Harris administration again. A major scandal, and this is real, related to the leaking of classified information as to Iran and its plans to attack, Israel and its plans to attack Iran. This is no small thing. And the question you have to ask yourself is, why are some of the people in the Biden-Harris administration being allowed access to classified information, especially when you consider their backgrounds? So we're going to talk about the spies among us. That's number two on the Triple Dipper. Spies among us. It's not a good look, man. It's awful. Spies among us, number two. And then number three, she's just missing on the dissing right now. That's what I'm calling it. I don't know what else to call it. So I just thought this morning, as I'm feeling kind of salty and it's early in the morning and I'm drinking coffee, missing the dissing. That's where Kamala is. She's missing the mark left and right as she continues to diss on various factions within the voting groups. I mean, she divides us all up, right? That's what Democrats do. They divide you all up into their identity politics groups. And then they alienate one to favor another, which never works. They always assume that everybody wants to be known by their skin color or by their religion or by their whatever. But when you diss people on a regular basis, all you do is trying to curry favor with the one little group you created, you alienate the others. Well, she's missing on the dissing, and I'm going to talk about that as number three on the Triple Dipper. All right, well, let me jump on over here to the Right Side Way monologue, and I gotta tell you, it kind of in relation to that missing dissing thing that I talked about a moment ago in the number three Triple Dipper. In one of those, like, too weird to be true, but yet it is moments, Kamala Harris just dissed on Christians everywhere. I mean, first she chose not to attend the Albert Smith Memorial Charity Dinner put on by the Catholic Archdiocese of New York City. Okay, it was an event. She skipped it. I guess you can write it off for, like, I'm busy that night, or I have to do my hair, or something. Whatever. Either way, she missed a major event. But then came the moment in one of her recent rallies that went way beyond missing an event. You may have seen the video. A young man yelled out, "Jesus is Lord," and got that kind of smarmy, "I'm about to school you" look from Kamala Harris. She looked at him and literally said, "Oh, I think you came to the wrong rally." And while the audience laughed and jeered, she felt empowered by her ill-timed, misguided, secular sense of humor. And she said, "I think you meant to go to the smaller rally down the street." And the audience howled and guffawed and mocked the kid who had said, "Jesus is Lord." And meanwhile, she just looked so proud. And then afterwards, reality set in as it began to get reported nationwide. She had so glibly mocked a young man for shouting "Jesus is Lord" and implied that that message was better suited to the Trump-Vance rally across town. In one fell swoop, Kamala Harris told Christian voters their faith-based political views were not welcome in her camp. They were better suited to the other camp. Christians everywhere need to take note. Look, some years ago while I was in the state Senate, a bill came up that dealt with pro-life issues. I don't remember which one in particular because there were several pro-life bills that I carried or co-sponsored. But I do remember the opposition. And there was one lady in particular who was always involved in the opposition to anything pro-life. And she was absolutely spiteful. I mean, she was just really obnoxious. I mean, vitriol against pro-life measures, I get it. Sometimes people are animated about that. But she always came across as having these mean-spirited personal attacks. She was an absolutely bitter person, and it showed. And on one occasion, in the middle of all this, I was accused of doing the most heinous of things, the most unforgivable. I was accused of letting my faith mix with my politics. "Say it ain't so, Phil. You didn't really act like a Christian in the political realm, did you?" Well, I hope I did. I mean, when I got elected to represent Senate District 10 in Alabama, I was not elected to be less than who I am. I ran as a conservative, I ran as a patriot, and I ran as an unabashed believer in Jesus Christ. Why would I leave that at home? If my faith is what I say it is, the most important thing to me, and it makes me who I am and what I am, then how can I possibly not take it with me into politics? Of course I took it with me into politics. I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't. But see, here's the deal. The truth is, we had better mix our faith with our politics. We had better pray about our vote. We had better mix our faith-based values and traditions and principles with our politics, because if we don't take those positions of faith into the public square, then someone else is going to take just the opposite to the public square for us. If there's a vacuum, it will always be filled. Wouldn't you rather it be filled with people who are like-minded and like-spirited in your faith? I recently attended the Alabama Policy Institute's annual dinner. Dr. Ben Carson was a speaker, did a wonderful job. At one point, he said something that I thought was profound, so I actually made a note in my phone so I wouldn't forget it. Speaking about faith, Carson said this. He said, "It is said that there are two things we should never talk about in public, politics and religion. But those are the two things," he said, "that we must talk about because those are where we're being attacked." And he's so right. And I'll take it one step further. Not only should we talk about those two things, politics and religion, but I believe that we absolutely 100% unequivocally should talk about them together. You see, Christians need to care about who's elected to make and enforce the laws that govern our country. Christians need to not only care about who's elected, but Christians need to also vote their faith and run for office themselves and seek the opportunity to carry their faith into the public square. I mean, it's really simple. Either we as Christians speak out about our faith, or those who don't believe will speak out about our faith. I'd rather it be us than them. So a recent study came out, though. Pollster George Barna did a survey, and he determined that inexplicably, 104 million Americans will not be voting in this coming election. But most notably to me is that among those expected 104 million non-voters, 32 million of them are self-identified Christians who are expected to sit this election out. For one reason or another, they just won't likely make it to the polls. Some of those are going to be reasonable excuses like health or travel or job conflicts, but the bulk of those non-voting Christians, they're just sitting out. The most common reason for the non-voting Christians given in the poll, fully 68% of them said a lack of interest in politics and elections. Y'all, that's almost 22 million Christians who say it's just not their bag, just doesn't get their attention, they're just not into it. Wow. Well, Dr. Jeff Myers is an author, a speaker, and a president of Summit Ministries. He recently talked about this. He said basically, if you don't know the candidates, if you don't know all the issues, then at the very least consider what he called constitutional principles like life, liberty, and property. Because, he said, those are three things the Constitution said is developed in order to provide. He went on then to say, too, this is a great quote. He said, how do I support life with my vote? How about liberty? Things like religious liberty and free speech. What about property? Who's going to be the most likely to think that people ought to have their own property and own businesses? Because there's a lot of worldviews out there, he pointed out. And he said, let's be honest. There's a lot of worldviews who say the abolition of private property would be a preferable state. Wow. So which candidate for any given office is going to be most likely to lessen the evils that occur around life, liberty, and property? That's going to be how you inform your decision. What he basically said was, life, liberty, and property. Those are things the Bible talks about. And so you should examine your vote. And by the way, you notice I have yet to say Republican or Democrat. All I'm telling you right now is you need to vote. You need to have an informed decision. And if you don't know the issues, if you don't know the people, if you don't know the candidates, you can at least look at it from life, liberty, and property because the Bible does talk about those. I believe that Myers is right. I'll take it one step forward from that. We're also called to be good stewards. I mean, we can look at the parable of the talents, right? Jesus told the story in Matthew 25 about the ruler who left on a trip and he gave three servants some money. Two of them took care of what they'd been given. They invested it, they worked it, they grew the ruler's resources. But one of them just sat on it. He buried it. Then he tried to say later it's because he didn't want to take a risk. So he just sat on it, did nothing. And in the end of the parable, he was the one who was seen as not being worthy. The implications of that parable are many, but one of the outcomes is the issue of stewardship. You see, good stewardship of that which we've been entrusted is not only sought, it is expected. What will we do with this country we've been given? Will we as Christians take bold action and grow it and shepherd it and be good stewards of it? Or will we sit on our haunches and just wait and see what happens? I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the one in the end who realizes that I had an opportunity to do something to advance this great nation in a way that increases our capabilities, enhances our strength, protects life, limb, and property, or liberty and property. But instead, I just did nothing? Listen, let me conclude with this. Our faith is not based on works. I believe that. I believe that my salvation is assured because I have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. No other way. But there's two parts to being a Christian. There's making Him Savior, and there's making Him Lord of our lives. My salvation is assured. Yours would be too if I did nothing else but believe that I would go to heaven by accepting Christ. But y'all, if I did nothing else, what would other people see? What good would I do while I'm here on this earth? What difference would it make? Sometimes Christians need to be busy being Christians. Not in a braggadocious, ostentatious way, but in a real and practical way. In James 2:18, we're told that faith and works go together because that's the visual reminder to the world that we believe. It says actually, but someone may say, you have faith and I have works. I say, show me your faith without the works and I'll show you my faith by my works. So Christians, let me wrap up by saying, listen to me. Faith and politics, they go together like a hand in a glove. If you sit this one out, you're wrong. Get up, get busy, get to the polls and vote your faith. Vote like your faith depends on it because maybe it actually does. Faith and politics, they go well together. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, I do believe that. I think we're called to that. I think that's part of being a good steward of our country. Faith and politics, mix them. Because that's who we are. How can we not let it be a part of what we do? Part of what we do needs to be a good steward, which means go vote. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Ran long on that monologue, so I won't get a lot of time in this segment. But I meant what I said. I really believe that a part of being good stewards of this country as Christians is to not sit idly by and just sit on our faith and pretend that being a Christian doesn't give us, you know, as much of a voice as anybody else. You mix your faith and your politics. You just do it. You know, vote for life. Vote for liberty. Vote for property issues. Because the Bible talks about those. It's stewardship, man. I'm just telling you. And I say the idea that we have to be, you know, seeking forgiveness for daring to have a faith in the public square. Ha! I got news. There's no way in the world we could be required to hide it under a bushel. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, there's that. John from Huntsville checks in and says, JP, this is a sign in Virginia that's supposedly booby-trapped with actual shotgun shells. Oh, that's, I don't know what that means, but okay. Has he been talking to you about a booby-trap with shotgun shells?
Well, the message above just says.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a man in Virginia put a big pro-Trump sign and booby-trapped it with actual shotgun shells, and a bomb squad showed up at his house.
Well, I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do that, just so you know. Don't be booby-trapping. Listen, the laws about booby-trapping, you can get, they're clear. You don't set up a booby-trap with the intent to create, you know, mayhem and chaos and, you know, physical damage. It's considered really bad. So, it's against the law. Mike from Arab says, I post this message often for all these people, Christians that won't vote. And then he has Hosea 4:6. Oh, I love this verse. Hosea 4:6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee. Have I got a caller on the line? I'm going to run out of time, so I guess I better get it pretty soon. Who we got there, bro? Is it Brian? Brian from Huntsville. Hey, buddy. How are you?
Yes, sir. Anybody that's a Christian and probably anybody else that believes in the First Amendment should be out there voting.
Yeah.
Portion of it being freedom of religion and freedom of speech. Now, granted, the Constitution wasn't done when the Mayflower came over, but that's why our first settlers came here, was to have the freedom of religion.
Well, that
and
right.
Even if they acted okay, y'all have a good one.
You're good, man. The music's about to hit. I'm sorry. He's spot on. He's absolutely spot on. The fact that the First Amendment's not just your speech. First Amendment is your freedom of the press. It is your freedom of religious expression. So you absolutely, that's a liberty issue. Those are our liberties. And the script, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. So I'm just saying, get busy. Get busy, Christians. Do not sit idle. Real quickly, Ali from Athens says, Colonel Williams, I used to be the exact type of Christian you described. I honestly at the time thought that it was a compromise and worldly to be involved in the public square and do anything other than classic ministry. And I'm so glad that God had other ideas. Excellent word, sir. Excellent word back to you, Allie. All right, more from that. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I am talking about, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. I got to get some more texts because you guys are like, whoo, like lighting them up right now. Bruce from Springville says, Christians need to vote. You better believe it'll prevent so much persecution to us if Democrats. It'll prevent so much persecution of us if Democrats are elected. Meaning, I think what he's saying is get out there and vote to prevent the persecution. I do not disagree, sir. Thomas Mathen says, I think maybe those who choose to not vote are sitting on their one talent, and they deserve the outcome they avoided. Well, they certainly can't complain, and we know that. TL from Huntsville says, excellent monologue, Phil. We need to give careful consideration with our right and responsibility to choose our leaders. George Washington, oh, shoot, his text got cut off. I hate it when that happens. I tell you what, TL, send me that text again, man, because only a part of it came through, and I can't give the whole quote, but it looks like it's going to be a good one. Ronnie from Danville. They say, it says, Colonel, I ask people at church if they ever call their senators and tell them what they want. I could say at least I tried. I call them a lot. They say it won't make a difference. I believe it will. I know it does. Hey, Ronnie, I'll just tell you right now. When I was a state senator, the thing that moved me the most was never the idea of, like, you know, the 1,000 emails that I got that were all exactly the same because they came through a subscription service. All you had to do was add your name to it. That all it did was cloud my inbox. It wasn't the lobbyists who walked down the hall and said, Senator, I'm being paid to talk about this. Can I talk to you for a minute? What really got me was when a well-informed and reasonable constituent would call. Now, the ones who would call and go, you better do what I want because you work for me and I'll get you out of office. And I was like, bring it. But the ones who called and said, I read the bill. Here's what that'll do to my life. Those were impactful to me. So, Ronnie, you're a spot on, brother. Stay on task. Jeff Rowe from Indiana says, Phil, people study and practice their religion so they may reap the rewards in the next life, but you need to study and participate in this world while you are living, and which leaders you choose will have a great impact on the life you live here and now, even the ability to practice your religion for your next life. Jeff Rowe, you are so correct, sir. I need to go look it up in the, where's the address of the verse that says, for I am convinced that I will see the goodness of the Lord while I am still here in the land of the living. It's a great verse. I need to now that I have the verse memorized, I better memorize the address. Steve from Tennessee says the Bible says that Enoch walked with God, and I will bet that he would have walked with him right into the voting booth. Nice. Nice. Well played, sir. Brian from Decatur says, in reference to the Israeli attack plans being leaked, rest assured the FBI is investigating it. Whew, we're saved, he says. No doubt. Richard from Madison says, outstanding monologue. We need our Christian faith in all aspects of our lives. I need to rely on it more when I drive. Road rage.
T.L. from Huntsville resent the text with quote in full.
Yeah, what do you say?
Said, we need to give careful consideration. George Washington said, it is impossible to rightly govern a nation without God and the Bible. The ultimate test of a moral society is the kind of world that it leaves to its children. Dietrich Bonhoeffer. What's the second quote?
Dietrich Bonhoeffer, yeah. Absolutely. What was the part from Washington again?
It is impossible to rightly govern a nation without God and the Bible.
Yeah, perfect. You know what? That reminds me. I actually spoke to a group this morning, and while I was there, the person before me had a thing up on the screen with a quote from Thomas Jefferson, and I had never seen it before. So I quickly got my phone out, took a picture, and if I can get it out here real quick, I'll read it to you. Thomas Jefferson allegedly said, "We in America do not have a government by the majority. We have a government by the majority who participate." Wow. Let that sink in, all y'all. Last one, and I'll go to the dippers. Phil, I heard on Babylon Bee, says Ken from Rimlap. From Babylon Bee, the Taliban were opening army surplus stores. Thanks, Ken. Not on topic, but it's still funny. Sort of, in a way, kind of not. All right, listen. Let's jump on in the dipper here. I got this first one I'm calling Gen Z Busy. In a few minutes, coming to join us in studio is a guy named Nicholas Schell. He's with Young America's Foundation at Jacksonville State University. You may ask yourself, Gen Z, do they stand for the same things that older conservatives stand for? Let me swing it to you. They're my Gen Z brother. So you obviously represent the conservative side of the base.
Mm-hmm.
You would consider yourself, to be a Gen Zer.
I am a Gen Zer, yes.
You are indeed. Mm-hmm. You embrace your Gen Z-ness.
Yeah. Reluctantly, but yes, I do embrace it.
Or as the British say, you're a Gen Zed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, from what I've, my synopsis of it is there's plenty of conservative Gen Zers still out there, but they're kind of in hiding because the polarization of politics in my generation is, you know, the people who are on the left in the Gen Z are so hostile and, you know, against conservatives that the Gen Zers who are conservative just learn to kind of be quiet. I mean, they'll vote still, but they're not going to be outspoken. They're not going to make the social media posts and such. But they're out there, you know, they're just kind of in hiding, and they're a lot more quiet than the left, you know. Not obviously not all of them. Obviously, yeah. Like Nicholas is not somebody
and how
myself.
About you?
Yeah. But the majority of conservatives and the Gen Z, I would say, are much quieter than the left.
But I will say, too, you see shining moments like you can look at South Carolina, mm-hmm. where the frat guys went out there and they were
protecting
not going to let
the flag.
They protected the flag. They were not going to let the flag be torn down. And they literally stood there and protected the flag and got pummeled with, you know, water bottles and everything else while the pro-Palestinian protesters were trying to mess them up.
Yeah, like I said, the polarization of, you know, if you're a liberal, a Gen Z liberal, there's no negotiation. You have to be full on to the left or you're a right wing MAGA extremist pretty much. So yeah. That's kind of where, you know, a lot of the quote moderates of the Gen Z are labeled as, you know, right wing extremists, even though they're not, because they're just not fully on the liberal side. And you know, that's part of why a lot of the people who aren't liberal and are in the Gen Z generation are they've decided to not voice their opinion as much.
I'm going to hazard a guess, too, that within that age group, especially the younger age, end of the age group, you tend to find people that struggle with maturity. And when you take polarization and you add it to immaturity, you get some pretty raucous behavior at times.
Yeah. When your frontal lobe hasn't even fully developed, you know.
Yeah.
Which mine technically still hasn't. So.
Well, I'm just, be honest with you, I'm impressed with your frontal lobe, just so you know. So I've got a clip here. Give me a thumbs up when you're ready on that audio clip. That clip one, this is Kamala Harris. So where is she? You good? So where is she right now on Gen Z? Well, I mean, there's a lot of things to talk about in that generation. And by the way, they care about the same stuff that everybody else, every other generation cares about. Sometimes their priorities are different than what an older generation's priorities might be, but the you tend to find the same litany of things. And I'll go through some of that here in a moment on an article I've got. But the first thing I would say is this. Kamala Harris is desperate right now to find those groups that she can grab hold of and claim them as her groups. It's all about, you know, her pandering to black men last week. It's all about getting Taylor Swift to endorse so the Swifties will, you know, embrace her. It's all about, you know, young women, because don't they want abortions? I can give them abortions on demand. And then you take a look once again at her words. Let's go ahead and own her with her own words. Where does she see the so-called Gen Zers? Which, by the way, if you're not familiar, Gen Z, which I just did not know till recently, is Z stands for Zoomers as opposed to Boomers. So the Gen Zoomers are born between the ages of 1997 through 2012. They grew up in the age of the internet. They experienced the 2008 recession. They talk about things like climate change, whereas in the past, you know, my generation, we're like, what? They have seen things happen that weren't necessarily a part of our generation. Some of them are born, obviously, post 9/11. So Kamala Harris, what has she said about Gen Z? Well, she's run the gamut, as you might expect. Play the clip.
I'll tell you, and I know this is a controversial topic for many of us, I love Gen Z. Because we have Gen Zs in our lives. We have kids who are Gen Zs. It can be complicated, I know. I love Gen Z.
What else do we know about this population, 18 through 24? They are stupid. That is why we put them in dormitories. And they have a resident assistant. They make really bad decisions.
I was watching your face.
I hate that laugh much.
I don't know. Listen, if she got elected, I don't know that I could. The mute button on my TV would be worn out. But I don't know that I could do that for 4 years.
It's like nails on a chalkboard.
Oh, it's absolutely the cackle. It's bad. But the content, that was two separate speeches, two separate times. And the first one, she smarmed. It was one of those where there are times when Kamala goes to the microphone and just where she's drunk. Every once in a while you feel like she had a little something before she went on stage just to sort of help steel the nerves, and all it did was loosen the lips. And so she's, I love Gen Z. And it was kind of gross. And next thing you know, she's giving a speech where she goes, Gen Z is stupid.
Yeah. And there was also the clip from the Brett Baer interview where he was like, you know, would you consider the Trump supporters stupid? It's like, oh, God, I wouldn't call the American people stupid. Yeah, she's doing exactly that right
there.
What
a great point.
Yeah.
Your frontal lobe is fully developed. I hadn't thought of that. You're right.
Yeah. But, I mean, she's right. I mean, a lot of people my age are stupid because they haven't matured. I wouldn't say stupid. They're immature is the right way to put it, I think. But also don't have that contrast of saying, you know, you want their vote, but then also they're not really smart. You know, that's a usual contradiction on her part, but I think immature would be the right term for that group of people.
I would agree. We're going to take a break right now. Let's take a break. We're in number one, the Triple Dipper, Gen Z busy. I'm telling you right now, listen, there are conservatives among, and I almost hate the pigeonholing, but if you're going to bracket people, the ones they call Gen Z, Lord, there's a bunch of conservatives, but I'm going to read you some stats, talk about some stuff, and then coming up top of the hour, we'll bring a guest in studio with us, Nicholas Schell from Young America's Foundation at JSU. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. All right, we're in this discussion right now about Gen Z getting busy, and I really do believe that you're going to wind up seeing impactful things happen during this election cycle from the younger voters. I mean, I just I sense that. I feel that. And I, by the way, I'm not saying just on one side. I think there's a lot of liberal, progressive, younger voters that are going to get busy also. So all the more reason for us to engage the conservative younger voters. Now, saying that, what's driving them? I mean, what's going to get them to the polls? Is it Taylor Swift? I mean, I don't know. Does it matter? All right, JP, I'm going to ask you again. I know you're not a Swiftie. At least not that
far
I'm aware
of. Far from it.
Okay.
Far from it.
All right, your manhood is secure. However, that being said, are there literally people over the age of 18? I mean, like, I can see 14-year-olds, but since they can't vote, I'm not worried. Or I'm not worried anyway, but is the Taylor Swift endorsement, does it mean something to, I don't know, picture an age group somewhere in 18 to 21 years old? I mean, does it matter?
I don't think she's going to bring any new voters in, but are there people out there who will be voting for Kamala Harris solely because Taylor Swift told them to? Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, there okay. are. So, you know, like I said, she's not going to be the deal breaker for anybody. Like if you're a Taylor Swift fan, you're probably already voting for Kamala Harris, but there are people voting for Kamala Harris.
Did you just say that?
Yes, I did. But people voting for Kamala Harris, there are people out there who are doing it solely because, you know, of Taylor Swift's endorsement. So, yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, I got an article from Town Hall exactly 5 weeks ago. Vice President Kamala Harris is struggling among younger voters, it says, despite trying desperately to appeal to Gen Z. According to a Cook Political report, Harris is doing worse among younger generations than President Joe Biden did during his 2020 campaign. Now, they go on to point out she still has a higher margin overall of younger voters than Trump does, but she has less of a margin than what her predecessor Joe Biden had, meaning they've lost within that demographic. Harris only leads now by 13 points in the younger Gen Z demographic, whereas Joe Biden led by like 30. So it's a double-digit drop. She is the worst lead. He has the worst lead among the group since Democrat John Kerry lost back in 2004. That's significant. I go on to the Taylor Swift piece here. There's a question back then was whether or not Taylor Swift's endorsement would be helpful. Well, apparently the Dems believe it is, because fast forward to today, Dateline 3 days ago. The Democrat National Committee is using the last stretch of Taylor Swift's Eras Tour to urge young people to vote for Vice President Kamala Harris. They're actually using her tour. It's not like her endorsement. Now it's her tour.
So they're going to come alongside her on tour?
I guess. It says Swift, who endorsed Harris, the Democratic presidential nominee, in September, is set to perform at the Hard Rock Stadium in Miami on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. In conjunction with her shows, the DNC announced it's launching a Taylor Swift-themed I Will Vote campaign across Florida with Snapchat filters, advertisements, and others that direct people to the IWillVote.com website. I mean, you know, use every tool in the toolbox, I guess.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think that's going to bring any new voters. But I will say this, though. Of all, like, the musicians whose listeners are, you know, young women, like Gen Z girls, like Billie Eilish, too, for example, the main reason that they give is abortion.
Yeah.
Or they frame it as reproductive freedom.
Rights.
It's
yes.
Like that's the opposite of that.
It's my reproductive health.
Yeah. So if you want to nail the one issue that they're clinging on to for why they're voting for Harris, it's abortion.
Funny you say that. I've got an article here. I pulled this from Ohio Capital Journal. So it's localized. It's refined down to Ohio and refined down even further. This particular article was written by someone who went to Kent State University to interview students. So there's your you know, niche, all right? Kent State University in Ohio, only voting in Ohio. Gen Z, it says, people born between 97 and 2012. In Ohio, they roughly are 15% of total voters. So that's a big chunk. As they polled students, and it was like man on the street type polling, it wasn't an official scientific poll. Number one, abortion. And then most of the students talked to them as reproductive rights and then gender equality and other issues were there. Now, they also mentioned Kent State is a liberal university. It's known for that. And they say that Gen Z is the most progressive generation when it comes to social issues, according to Pew Research. But it does not mean, the article points out, and I was glad, it's one of the few conservative lines in the whole article. It says it does not mean they're only voting for Democrats. There's that. But it also says that like older generations, like boomers, Zoomers also care about the economy. The economy factors in. They care about things like health care costs, environmental protections, and wanting to make sure that America stays a strong democracy and helps those who are facing poverty. So some of the same issues that every generation looks at, just maybe in a different category. It does say, though, that as they walked around Kent State University, they couldn't find many people that were worried about immigration issues. And I'm like, what?
Or foreign policy.
Or foreign policy.
Yeah.
Because most of them probably couldn't place their fingers on a map and name certain countries. No. Nope. Just saying. And they also said violent crime was something that could be fixed with things like gun safety and gun control. So how about no? But a recent study done by Harvard Kennedy School's Institute of Politics found that 64% of young voters say they're supporting Harris, 32% voting for Donald Trump. It's a big age demographic. If they'll vote, it's a big age demographic voting block. Along gender lines, younger women are more likely to identify as progressive, with likely female voters in that Gen Z category going 70% for Harris, 23% for Trump. Male Gen Zs tend to have a liberal trend, but not as strongly. Male voters in Gen Z, 53% Harris, 36% Trump. I will point out, it's a Harvard Kennedy School's, you know, poll. So, last question in the article, though, was, can Gen Z swing the election? It all comes down to the turnout. That's it. It depends. It's like the old law school phrase. It depends. Coming up next, we'll just keep that conversation going. Nick LaChelle from Young America's Foundation, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
Listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. Hour one just flew by, but we're still in Dipper number one, so the Triple Dipper today, the first section there is Gen Z getting busy. And I'm glad to welcome somebody into the studio today. Nick Schell is a student at Jacksonville State University up here in Northeast Alabama. And he is you hail from the Northeast Alabama area, I believe, originally.
Yes, sir.
And you're the chapter president for Young America's Foundation. But more than that, you told me you're involved in all kinds of stuff on campus, conservative through and through.
Yes, sir, absolutely. So I'm a member of College Republicans, and I'm also a SGA senator on campus at Jack State.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. Well, that's listen, I did student government when I was in college at South Alabama, and so it's amazing what you can learn and also be a part of by doing all that. So thank you for what you're doing for your campus. All right, so Young America's Foundation, YAF, let's call it YAF. But YAF, I think, is it former Governor Scott Walker that is the current executive director or president of it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, national organization. But tell us about the organization first so folks can get a frame of reference for that.
So at YAF, we are really focused on just kind of pushing back against the woke ideologies on campus.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of Marxist ideology. We have a lot of leftist ideology. And so, like, at Jack State, we like to promote more conservative, traditional values. We support anti-communism, and we also support the free market capitalism. We support the free market of ideas. And overall, we like to have discussion with the left. So at our Q&A events, we'll have a speaker come to campus, and we'll have an open Q&A for students in the community to come out and to ask questions and have a discussion, both left and right on the political spectrum. So we focus a lot on discussion and a lot of pushback against the woke ideology and professors trying to push these core messages of the left onto students and try to sway them in a political way.
And people out there might be listening going, yeah, but you're in North Alabama. I mean, how how liberal progressive can it be? They'd be surprised at what's on a campus, even in North Alabama.
Yes, sir. It is absolutely prevalent at every single university. Every single university, especially. So my first year, I went to Tuscaloosa.
All right.
And I was at the University of Alabama. And I remember, you know, I go into this class for anthropology. And, you know, silly me, I was naive to think that it wouldn't be political. Well, somehow they made anthropology political. And they were going on about transgenders and homosexuals and how prevalent they are in history. And I'm thinking to myself, what is the point of this class?
Yeah.
And that's how I got involved with YAF. I just kind of found these group of like-minded individuals, all conservative and Christian too. And we worked to push back against these professors that were so prevalent and leftist. And there are a few good ones, but the majority, I would say 60-70% on campus, even at Jack State, there's a majority liberal professor status there. But in Tuscaloosa, Jack State, all around.
So JP was at Tuscaloosa as well, and you saw some liberal stuff on campus, I imagine, at some point.
Oh, yeah. I told the story on here before when I did Bama Bound, and we were forced to say our pronouns as we introduced ourselves. You know, so
forced to say your pronouns.
Yeah.
Unreal.
So although we are in a red state, conservative state of Alabama, yeah. I mean, it's prevalent, like you said, on universities nationwide. And it's, you know, Marxism is like the key component of it, too, which is scary. It's not just liberals, progressivism, whatever. It's Marxism just disguises that. So,
well, so you guys, and you call it YAF or YAF? What do you refer to it?
Either one is acceptable.
Right.
We like YAF. We like YAF. So,
all right. So, Young America's Foundation, YAF, YAF. You guys, I don't want to forget. I'm going to say it right now. You guys do have an event coming up. What, next week? I think, right?
It's November the 14th.
November
the 14th. It's a Thursday. We're bringing the 53rd Secretary of State, John Merrill. He's going to come speak on campus post-election. So it's the week after the election on Thursday. It'll be at Merrill Hall. We'll flag you in. You can walk in the room. It's open to the entire community if you want to show up.
Okay.
Ask some questions to John Merrill. And he's a wonderful man. I love him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. He's a great speaker. And I guarantee you he'll be citing some statistics somewhere in there because his gift for numbers is like the Rain Man. It's kind of scary. Tell him I said hey, by the way.
Yes, sir.
All right, so let me ask you this. YAF, Young America's Foundation. Some folks out there look at the clickbait stuff we see on the news, the pro-Palestinian protests at, you know, at Columbia University, or even down at Auburn, we had some defacing of campus grounds by pro-Palestinian protesters. And there are those who I know who look at it from the news perspective, like what they see on social media or on TV, and they think your generation is lost. Answer that for me.
Absolutely not. I do not think this generation is lost. I think this generation is coming up in a world where we don't have fathers in our homes. We have a lack of Christianity in our schools, in our government. And I believe this generation is going to have an extreme awakening, an extreme spiritual awakening of Jesus Christ coming into their life and speaking to them how we have fallen astray. And I believe more so that Gen Z is split. Gen Z is split between liberal and conservative. Now, how far the extent goes, I couldn't tell you. But for the conservative side, I could absolutely tell you that Jesus Christ is making a comeback, and he's going to be alive and ready and awaiting this election so that we can get whoever into office.
First of all, I love hearing that. I'm sitting right here with two of you. You're 21, JP, and you're how old right now, Nick?
I'm 19 years old.
19. Okay, so within the same bracket. I'll just say it for the audience's benefit. I'm of the firm belief that if you want to call them Gen Z, fine, but I'm of the firm belief that your generation has still got it going on. And there's always this talk about things like Army recruiting, and the Army wants to blame it on, well, there's just a fewer people out there that qualify for military service and all that. Okay, if that's true, fine. It does not mean they're not fully capable and, oh, by the way, competent and, oh, by the way, willing to do the things that are still necessary to keep and preserve this country in the manner in which the previous generations did. That being said, let me ask you this. We're going to have a couple minutes here for the break, but policy issues. I think you guys are out there But what do y'all care about? So if you had to pick like the top three or four issues, and even in ranking order if you can, what is your generation, in your opinion? And I'm just asking you, because you and JP might even have a different idea, but what does your generation care about that they're willing to go to bat for?
Yes, sir. So number one, and this is more of a personal opinion, immigration is one of our key issues in this nation, and especially on the southern border. Number two is going to be the economy.
All right.
How either president, Kamala or Trump, are going to handle this upcoming, what we believe to be a recession. So the economy would be number two. And number three is social ideology, considering Marxism, communism, considering all of these LGBTQ ideas coming into our schools, into our society, and hurting our nation. And on top of that, with number three, I would say reintegrating Christianity into our government and our society.
Okay, so then I would just make that faith. So I don't think that's any different than anything I'm hearing other generations. Now, is that you personally, or do you think that, like, you're not speaking fully for the organization, but do you think that's across the board, like your generation would see roughly the same?
I would say that the majority of my generation, now, it's different for the left. I speak for the right. But for the left, I would say their main issues are those social policies, so keeping a secular government, keeping LGBT ideology, and...
Oh, the left. Yeah, okay,
yes, sir. So for the left, they're keeping those ideologies. And then on top of that, abortion is a main issue for the left. That is the number one issue for women in America. 40% of women in America are worried about the abortion issue. So I think we have a very, very major issue on the left and the right, having two different ideas of what the issue is in America. And I would say what I already listed here, immigration, faith, society, and economics, I would say that that's more of an issue on the right, more, you know, we want to lower taxes and we want to return to a traditional conservative society and Christianity and government.
Yeah.
In the left, it's more, we want abortion, we want quote-unquote women's rights, which I don't believe it's a right to murder children, but they want abortion and they want the LGBT nonsense in our society.
All right, so you're here and you're sitting here with me. I'm not asking you to just, like, debate him right now or anything, but is there anything he listed on the conservative right side of your generation, immigration, economy, social ideologies, cultural issues, and faith? Would you say that's pretty on spot?
Yeah, I would agree. I think immigration and the economy are pretty much 1A, 1B, I would say, for my generation. And, you know, he mentioned abortion on the left. I would say for majority of liberal Gen Zers, that is the only issue for them. That is the only thing they really care about. I mean, you could throw, quote, foreign policy in there when they talk about Israel and Gaza, when they couldn't point to Gaza on a map. So I don't really count that as, you know, real foreign policy. I think they're just being told what to say. But yeah, I would say on the conservative side, he pretty much hit it on the mark. And, you know, the trans ideology too, I see that making a rise of people realizing how ridiculous it is to have, you know, people playing, men playing in women's sports and such.
Yeah.
I see that becoming more and more important amongst conservative Gen Zers to realize how ridiculous that is. But
yeah.
I would say a lot more issues that the right cares about in my generation and they're actually educated on versus the left. It's abortion, abortion, abortion. And then the rest is what they're told to say, I would
say. Okay. All right. We're doing a Gen Z discussion right now. We're taking a break, but we're doing it. Listen, I really believe Gen Z is getting busy. I resisted for years the idea of saying boomers and Gen Z and but you know what? As long as we're talking about an age bracket, let's just give it the name because that makes it easier to deal with. But the reality is this. I think Gen Z is getting busy. I think they have a chance to make a difference in this generation. And I also believe, by the way, they're the next America. So, hey, they are America. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. Hey, going to the text lines real quick, just so you know, we're in studio right now with Nick Schell from Young America's Foundation at Jacksonville State University. So, Nick, Mark from Red Bay, Alabama, just texted in, said, this young man is spot on. Him and young people like him give me hope for the country. God bless and keep up the good work.
Yes, God bless. Thank you.
Absolutely. We got, I think you got a number of new fans, by the way, just so you know. And then Kano from Layton, Alabama says UNA up in Florence got voted one of the most liberal colleges in the U.S., and it's in Alabama. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, let me ask you a question. Does Taylor Swift's endorsement mean anything to your generation?
Well, it means quite a bit for, I'd say, the opposite gender, but for men, absolutely not. For the opposite gender, the ones that look at Taylor Swift anyways, I don't think they really care much of what her political opinion is. I mean, she's a celebrity.
Yeah. I look at it and think, this is the most vacuous endorsement I've ever seen. But, you know, I don't know. I always picture the Swifties being the, like, 14-year-old teeny boppers who all want to dress like her and act like her and talk about her on social media. But I'm finding out that apparently she's got a fan base that transcends the 14-year-olds. And so they're thinking that her endorsement is going to mean something in the voting age groups. All right. Speaking of voting age groups, I had an article I was looking at earlier, and this is just from one college in Ohio, a fairly liberal article, but it's Kent State University. And they pointed out that in Ohio alone, your age group, your generation, your Gen Zers, equate to 15% of total voters in the entire state. That's a chunk. Do you think that your generation is going to sway the election one way or the other? Do you think your generation has the organized ability to block vote one way or the other right now?
Yes, sir. I absolutely believe that Gen Z is going to be a critical part of the vote, not only because we're the influencer age. So we have influencers online that are paid by the DNC, or I don't believe any are paid by the RNC, but the DNC is going heavy in the influencer scene. And you have people like Dean Withers, or you have people like Harry Sisson that go on TikTok, they go on Twitter, and they espouse Democrat policy line by line. And I think it really does have an impact on young viewers that look at TikTok and scroll through TikTok and see these young guys that just espouse Democrat policy. On the other hand, you have the Republican side of the Gen Z vote, and I really think it's going to be split down the middle. I think there's a split down the middle consensus between Gen Z of being a liberal and supporting the LGBTQ ideology, and being a conservative where you support the free market capitalism, you support the free marketplace of ideas, because more so on the left, I think there's a lot of censorship. Yeah. And on the right, we support free speech.
Yeah.
And I think it's really going to be split down the vote.
Is there much of a what I would call a moderate undecided base within Gen Z, or is it polarized to the point that everybody's either left or right?
The Overton window spans very, very wide.
The Overton window.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Very, very wide.
You might want to tell the audience about the Overton window.
But so the Overton window, for a quick explanation, is just the normal or the accepted views of a society. Anything past that, you become extreme. But I think the Overton window has really gone very wide, left and right. Some have even said it splits. I've had professors say that it splits and there's nobody in the middle, but I really do think there are people in the middle, and it just goes left and right very wide. And there are a very small minority of people in the middle in Gen Z. I think it's got so polarized that, honestly, I don't know if the moderates have any consequential effect on this election per Gen Z. Now, for older voters that are much more moderate, absolutely, and I would also attack those if I were either Republican or Democrat. But for Gen Z, I think it's so polarized.
Okay, well, that's interesting, and I don't disagree with it, because that's pretty much what I've seen. I don't know that I mean I see the Mitt Romneys in the older generation. I see the folks who were undecided or apathetic, for that matter. But I haven't. I do see people in every generation that are like, oh, voting, yeah, it's not really my thing. I get that. But when it comes to saying, I don't know what I believe yet, I don't see much of that in your generation. I think there's been people that they might change their views later, but they've been glomming onto one or glomming onto the other. Look, we're going to take a break right now. That segment flew by. But when we get back, what I want to do is start diving into what is YAF, what are college Republicans, what are groups like yours? What is TPUSA? All the rest of them. What are they doing to galvanize a conservative growth within your age group? And go with that for a few minutes, all right? And all right. Let's talk about policies and the things we care about, all right?
Yes, sir.
All All right, listen, we're in studio right now having a discussion on Gen Z getting busy. Y'all, listen, this is literally the next generation that will be in office running stuff. So pay attention. And, oh, by the way, if you got somebody out there who's listening right now, they're younger and they're not sure what they believe, have them dial in right now because we're going to talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I'm talking about Alabama. Don't argue with me. It's Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, we're back in studio. Spend a little more time with Nick Schell. He's with the Young Americas Foundation, a student at Jacksonville State University. You're also involved in other things on campus besides that. You said student government is one. And didn't you also tell me before we went on the air that you were with College Republicans as well?
Yes, sir. I'm with College Republicans.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. The various interests that you're involved in, and there's other organizations too. There's TPUSA, Charlie Kirk's organization. I'm trying to think what else. There's Young Conservatives for America. There's a variety of different groups that are out there that are of a similar vein. What are y'all doing in a practical sense? What are y'all doing to galvanize your generation or to move your generation to be more actively engaged in the processes and even to vote?
Yes, sir. So with Young Americans for Freedom, we're really trying to be activists. We're really trying to get out there. We're really trying to spread the message. I have more experience in Tuscaloosa. This is my first semester at Jack State. But in Tuscaloosa, a lot of the experience came from having a table event. So we would table out in the quad, and we would have leftists come up to us and yell at us and spit at us and throw chicken at us and spill coffee on our table. We had a lot of things happen, especially in Tuscaloosa. While I think it's a vocal minority of leftists, we still had that discussion, and we still talked about the issues. And that is what we want to do, is talk about the issues. And we have voter drives. With the SGA at Jack State, we had a recent voter drive that I worked on, and we had over 200 signups to register to vote just with one tabling in one day at the TMV.
Wow.
So we really do work hard, and we work so that we don't have an apathetic generation, that we have a generation that gets out there and does their civic duty to vote.
What about getting involved in actual campaigns?
So I would love to get involved with a Trump campaign. Currently, because of how much I run, I don't have the time. Yeah. I'd love to. But honestly, I think the Democrats do a really good job. They do a really good job. And I think credit's due where it's earned. And they do a really good job of getting out there and telling people to vote. Now, is it all ethical? I don't know. In Georgia, it's a little different. But in Alabama, what I've witnessed is a lot of the Democrats are getting out there, and they're getting active.
Yeah.
And I think it's responsible of the Republicans and anyone else who wants to vote to get out there and also perform their civic duty. Because if you don't, the Democrats are going to do what they want to do.
It's absolutely true. The get out the vote effort, when I say working a campaign, I'm not even talking about like being on staff of the campaign. But there is something to be said for and by the way, I know that you're with YAF, and you probably can't speak to a full endorsement right now because y'all are a nonprofit organization. I get that, but conservative policies being what you care about, are the conservative organizations like the ones we mentioned, like the ones you're involved in? Are y'all engaging the process of even doing like door knocking and putting out signs and things like that for chosen candidates, or for that matter, at least for the causes? And getting present in people's minds, not just your generation, but even going and telling other people it's time to vote.
Yes, sir, absolutely. The CRFA, which is the organization in Alabama, they are hosting a door knocking event in Georgia. So they're going to bring everybody in Tuscaloosa and whoever at Jack State to go out to Atlanta.
That's the College Republican Federation of Alabama, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. And they're going to go out in Atlanta, and they're going to door knock. And any surrounding area in Georgia, we really want to try and get people out to vote. And we want to spread the message of who we are as conservatives, because a lot of people are apathetic. A lot of people don't really look into it. And I think it's absolutely necessary and vital to get people out there and do it.
I would agree. And, you know, if you look at it right now, Joe Biden is still president, they say. All right. apparently he's still in the seat anyway. He's still getting the paycheck. How about that? if I'm not mistaken, he was one of the youngest senators ever elected in U.S. history. And I want to say he was in his late – was he in his late 20s? You can look for him if you don't mind, JP.
So that was 40 years ago.
Oh, that was a long time ago, yeah. But he's been in D.C. for over 50 years. So he was somewhere in the neighborhood of 29, 30 when he first got elected. So what I'm saying there is, look at that. That's a guy who apparently got involved in the processes early, and it carried through. Now, I'm not looking for career politicians. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is your age group can certainly be involved.
Yes, sir.
He was 30 years old.
He was exactly 30 dot. Years yep. old. Okay, so there's that, which meant he probably had to be running when he was 29. The get out the vote effort and the voter registration drives, have you had any pushback at all from the campus authorities stopping you from doing that kind of thing?
No, sir, I don't believe so. We work hand in hand with the campus in order to do these things. As long as it's nonpartisan, they'll allow us to do whatever. And even in Tuscaloosa, we were actually really good friends with the faculty. They were really helpful with us, and they knew what we were going through and what the students on campus were pushing back and the professors were pushing back against us.
Well, I think that's fair to say that you're going to wind up having conservative faculty everywhere, just like you're going to have liberals. Unfortunately, on college campuses, it's like they're always outnumbered. But the fact that they're there for you. The organization that you've got right now, what's it take to be a member?
It's absolutely free. So just be a student.
It's one of my favorite words.
And that's it.
Just be a student and be a conservative, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Is this a new chapter or are y'all still growing it?
So I'm the founding president. I'm building this chapter from the ground up, and yeah, I'm using all the resources I can.
How was the chapter at Tuscaloosa you were involved in? How big?
Absolutely massive. It's the largest one in the SEC, and I was the director of outreach my freshman year for that chapter. We had over 100 members, I believe, 100 plus, and we really worked hard to get the word out, and we were the biggest conservative. We were the premier conservative club on campus at Tuscaloosa.
All right. Outstanding. Well, we need more of it. In looking at the lib groups, when you saw people coming to the table, you know, and like you said, throwing chicken at you, spilling coffee or whatever else, were they organized liberal progressive efforts or were they the one-off haters?
It's the one-off. The one-off is more prevalent. They'll see us and they'll go rabid. It's like something gets in their head and they just can't stand us.
Yeah, I think there's a spiritual warfare going on.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I know they're out there. There are certainly going to wind up being liberal progressive groups that do organize. I don't see them the same way. So I think it's funny. I feel like we're watching what I would call a rise of the conservative organization within your age group, especially on campuses, less than we're seeing a rise of a progressive organization. And yet what I would say is that the progressive liberal bent within your generation appears to be more prevalent, although yours is rising. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
I don't know if it's true or not. That's just the sense that I have from the outside looking in. You weigh in. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I would agree. It's the one-offs, like he said. It's this not really a organized effort. It's just a bunch of people who are miserable and angry, it seems. And I'm trying to remember who it was when I was at Alabama. It was somebody like a Charlie Kirk or somebody that came and sat outside the Ferguson Center and had like a table discussion like that where people could come up. And I remember it made all the liberals at Alabama just furious. Like,
I think it was Charlie Kirk, wasn't it? Do you know?
I can't remember exactly who the influencer was, but it was somebody like that that came and set up the table outside of the student center and just let them come up and debate. And they had to have police protect them because, you know, the liberal students were, infuriated. It's like he said, it's like something comes over them where they can't control themselves. They're so angry that somebody with an opposing view is at their school.
Yeah.
And, the conservatives, the organized conservative organizations are the ones that are much calmer and willing to have a discussion where it seems like just a bunch of isolated young liberals who are just miserable and running around and angry. And I feel like they're not getting as much done as the conservative organizations.
Well, and I hope that's true. I do. And the reality is y'all are not just the future of America. Y'all are America right now. but you are the future leaders of America. And I would much rather know that we are seeing the growth, the cultivation, if you will, of a conservative base so that it grows into the leadership position, having conservative roots already established. You got that audio clip we played a minute ago, that very first one from Kamala. If you can get that ready, give me a thumbs up when you're good on that. Audio one, you good on that? All right, so you didn't get to hear this earlier. This is Kamala giving two separate speeches, and I want to end on just your thoughts on her saying one thing about Gen Z and then saying another completely different in a different speech. Play it, bud.
I'll tell you, and I know this is a controversial topic for many of us, I love Gen Z. Because we have Gen Zs in our lives. We have kids who are Gen Zs. It can be complicated, I know. I love Gen Z.
What else do we know about this population, 18 through 24? They are stupid. That is why we put them in dormitories. And they have a resident assistant. They make really bad decisions.
Okay. I know I'm putting you on the spot. I know it's somewhat inflammatory, but give me your first, just your unvarnished thoughts on that compilation of audio clips.
Personally, I think it's a very bad decision to vote for Kamala. And that's speaking for Gen Z. That's speaking for myself. Very bad decision. Honestly, you know, I don't really care what she has to say about my generation. I know she's a politician. I know she's going to say whatever she needs to say to get elected. And just that type of behavior, the way she acts to Christians and to Gen Z. To Christians, she says, you're at the wrong rally. Yeah. Really? Okay, I'll go to Trump.
Yeah.
So.
Well, listen, man, I think it's fair to say that she wants your vote, but she doesn't know how to get your vote. But right now, she still has a lot of your base is voting. Same across any generation. Half of America is apparently voting Democrat, they say. But that being said, I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate your organizations, YAF, College Republicans, even your involvement with the student legislature. Stay in the fight, all right?
Yes, sir.
America needs it. So we appreciate you being here today. Nick Schell with Young America's Foundation, Jacksonville State University, 19 years old, already speaks like he's been doing this for a few years. Appreciate you making time for us, all right?
Thank you very much.
And we got him a Right Side Ruffian T-shirt, so wear it on campus proudly, all right?
All right.
All right, listen, we're taking a break right now. We'll come back. The Switch Dipper's got to talk about some stuff happening with Israel. Y'all, there's spies among us. That's what we know. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades. Like, I got to get some text messages and keep this caught up because you guys are, like, texting like crazy today. So, Champ from Decatur says, what a pleasure it is that you're a well-spoken and well-mannered young man. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he came in, Champ, and he just did a great job. But it's also because he already believes it. I mean, this is like, you were hearing who he is. So that's just very cool. Thomas Mathens says, great time with the Gen Zer. Are you aware of Mighty Alabama Strike Force from the ALGOP? Why, yes. Yes, I am. In fact, we also had Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall on the show last Friday, and we talked about that very thing. But he says they're getting volunteers out to go to Georgia to help get out the vote and the push for poll watchers. Yes to all the above. Thomas, good stuff, man. Appreciate you reminding me. Aaron from Decatur, is there an easy way for students to vote around various campuses? What do you mean? I don't know what he means by vote around. Can they get their absentee ballots on? I don't know. What's he asking?
I assume he just means, is there an easy way for college students to vote? So
I would say that it's the same as anybody else. Mm-hmm. They just got to care enough to do it.
Maybe asking if there's anywhere on the actual college campuses to vote.
Well, that's a great point. By the way, Aaron also had a really nice text. He said, Nick mentioned earlier in his comments, that Nick mentioned his generation had a lack of fathers in the house. Said, I hope Nick himself has a father at home telling him he's proud of him. If not, allow me. You're doing good work, young man. I'm proud of you. That's an awesome comment, Aaron. Thank you for that. Gary from Leicester, Alabama says, in my opinion, no true Christian will vote for Harris. There you have it. John from Huntsville just says, JP's awesome.
Thank you, John Paul.
Shorty from Anderson says, hey, Phil, I just wanted you to know I got some French fries last night. I wanted to know if you got some French fries last night, and if so, they were from McDonald's. I did not. Charlene had an amazing chicken pot pie at home, and I was all in for it. So, but the fries, I told her, I literally was thinking about McDonald's fries. And I'm to the point that I'm, that whole Trump thing has got me like the whole French fry thing. I could do some French fry. By the way, did you know, this is a we're going to chase a rabbit here for a minute. Did you know that French fries used to be cooked in beef tallow? And then someone somewhere, FDA or whatever, got involved, and they said, no, no, we need to do this in, like, you know, seed oil. And so now we're cooking them in seed oil, but they're finding that seed oil actually has more carcinogenic effects. And so this is one of RFK's things.
Yeah, I was just saying, this is right up his alley.
So Trump doing the whole Mickey D's thing over the weekend, I wondered if RFK, I wondered if RFK with his health bent was going to say, oh, I can't believe I'm endorsing the guy who's now promoting fast food. He came out today. It was a great tweet. He said, I love the idea. And he had a picture of his father eating outside of some burger joint. He said, I love the idea of people being able to enjoy a good burger and fries. Mm-hmm. He said, but let's remember what they used to be like and now what they're not.
Yeah.
He said, why don't we get back to getting the government out of picking which oil you're allowed to use, go back to the oils that were better for us. It's kind of like the whole thing about when in the 70s we went from butter to margarine. It was all about, oh, it's healthier for you. It's not butter. I'm going to tell you right now, my family, we switched back to butter years ago. Butter is actually better for you than the whole margarine thing.
What's it called? I can't believe it's not butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can't believe it's not butter, why do you call it butter?
Yeah.
It's like butter.
Well, you know, talking about French fries, once you cook them in, when my family went to Vegas and we went to a very expensive restaurant, we were going to indulge one night and go to like one of the bottom floors of the casino where it had a steak restaurant, and they had duck fat fries, where they cooked them in duck fat.
Were they good?
It was the best fries I've ever had. I pointed out to my dad and I was like, I don't even know what that would taste like. He said, well, then get them. And they were... Yeah, they were amazing.
Well, apparently they made an impression because I'm watching the look on your face. And you're wishing you had a plate of duck fat fries right now.
They were something.
Yeah, one of my favorites, we'd still joked about it for years. I went to dinner with some folks in Montgomery, and I've forgotten where we were now, but we ordered truffle fries.
Mm-hmm.
And they were French fries, and they were cooked in like kind of like the big – look at us talk about food again. They were like cooked in the big pile, you know?
Yeah, I love truffle fries.
Truffle fries. But, oh, man, my gosh, they were totally different. And I could have sat there and consumed the entire plate myself. It got a little embarrassing. I kept reaching for the plate.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
All right, listen, we got more text messages. Casey Junebug from Hartzell says, this book was required for one of my daughter's pre-nursing classes at Auburn. It's called Privilege, Power, and Difference. Really? At Auburn? Come on. And there's a second thing. She says, oh, the Privilege, Power, and Difference is a groundbreaking tool for students and non-students alike to examine systems of privilege and difference in our society. Gag me. And that's in a nursing class. Well, wonderful. At Auburn, no less. Well, that's just good. Thanks, Junebug. John from Brownsboro says, national economy, national security, energy. I guess he was listing about the guy.
Yeah, he sent that in when we were listing off the most important topics amongst conservative Gen Zers.
Gotcha. Bruce from Springville says, there's no better thing than not only eating fries, but dipping them in tartar sauce. Tartar sauce?
I've never even had tartar sauce.
Tartar sauce, no. No, tartar sauce is where you dip your shrimp and stuff. You don't put that on French fries. Now, I will say, I'm pretty fond of the waffle fries at Chick-fil-A.
Oh, yeah.
And I prefer the honey mustard on them than over the ketchup.
You know, when we were working fries, if one would fall out of the box, you would take it, look around, see if a manager's looking, and pop one in. By the end of the day, you've had like 10 French fries throughout the day.
Don't get me started on what happened at the movie theater when I worked there in the 80s. Oh, they didn't have cellophane wrappers on the candy. Don't even talk about it. Don't even go there. All right, where we are going to go is coming up after the break, Spies Among Us. It's embarrassing. It's awful. And also, it's a national security issue. We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three here on a Taco Tuesday. Taco Tuesday for now, because there's debate among our staff as to whether we're going to be Tater Tuesday. We may have a change coming. But anyway, the bottom line is this. It's Taco Tuesday, and it's 3 hours, and we're in hour number three. Dipper number two. So here's my next Dipper. I call it Spies Among Us, and I'm going to get to the reasons why in a moment. But the reality is this. Israel is right now fighting its enemies and too often having to also fight its friends. And that should not be. It's galling to me to know that we have a stated position, a stated matter of policy that has been unchanged throughout multiple iterations of, you know, presidential cycles that says that Israel is our ally and we will help support and defend their interests because their interests are aligned with ours. That has not changed. Except that you have a Biden-Harris administration which is feckless, absolutely feckless, scared to death of offending the pro-Palestinian base. Wondering what it would mean if we got too busy. I mean, I don't want to get too busy. And they will openly say, well, we support Israel. And then they'll behind the scenes, they'll do things that make you wonder, do they really support Israel? And I got to say, the liberal base that they're worried about is not that worrisome, if you will. The liberal base that Kamala is worried about losing their vote because they support the Hamas and the pro-Palestinian positions, I don't see them as being a massive voting block. They're just noisy. And I could be wrong. I do think they're out there. But I don't think that with the exception of certain pockets like parts of Dearborn, Michigan and that kind of thing, I don't think you're going to wind up seeing an overwhelming amount of voter turnout for the anti-Israel crowd. What I do think you're going to have, though, is more and more people who identify themselves as being practicing Jews or that are getting tired of the Democrat base, tired of being a part of a party that won't slap down the progressive activists within their own base for being pro-Hamas. Now, when I say that Israel is fighting its enemies, it's not just us. I don't know what's going on with France, but Macron, French President Emmanuel Macron is just out there right now. He's slapping Israel left and right on a regular basis. I got a story from Red State, came out yesterday. So about, was it 2 weeks ago? About 2 weeks ago, President Macron called for an end to arms exports to Israel. Because now Israel, by the way, people don't realize this, but Israel is one of the leading producers of advanced weaponry in the world. Their defense systems industry is every bit as powerful for their country as ours is here. And their technology is on par with ours. And in fact, we do collaborative work with Israeli defense companies. But Macron comes out recently, and because he's deferring to his own pro-Palestinian immigrant base, he's calling for an end to arms exports to Israel. Why? Why would you do that? What is your... Netanyahu personally answered him with a video message where he told he and other floundering Western leaders that Israel is going to, quote, win with or without their support, but their shame will continue long after the war is won. In other words, you can take that position if you want to, but in the end, we're still going to win, and you're going to be on the wrong side, is what he's basically saying. Well, that was a couple of weeks ago. Now fast forward to now. This past weekend, or last week, actually, Israeli officials, according to Red State, ripped French President Emmanuel Macron's decision to prohibit Israeli companies from being able to present or participate in an upcoming Euro-Naval Defense Exposition. Now, these expos are a big deal. And you got these companies that put a lot of their time and effort into going to these expos for networking and for showing what they can do, and they were just told they're not even allowed to participate. Like, what? What? Why would you do this? Did Israel suddenly become your enemy? Are you not going to allow them to participate because they're not aligned with French interests anymore? So Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant just slammed Macron, saying French President Macron's actions are a disgrace to the French nation and the values of the free world he claims to uphold. This is basically like building an arms embargo against a Jewish state. It's basically what he called a hostile policy towards Israel. That's going on there. But no one can deny, too, that we don't have a anti-Israel sentiment among the progressive left in the United States. I've got a sound clip here. It's a perfect segue, actually, from our last segment. We just did the whole thing about Gen Z. Well, when I was researching for that segment this morning, I came across Ben Shapiro, who is Jewish, with Daily Wire, speaking to a group of students at UCLA at a YAF gathering. And he had a Q&A time, and he, just like he and Charlie Kirk and several others do, they're great at taking questions and being willing to either debate and or refute the things that liberals try to say to them. So Ben Shapiro, this, by the way, Ben Shapiro, if you've never heard him talk, he talks 100 miles an hour, and he's very adamant. It's just his way. It's his style. He's always like this. So I'm going to probably let you start playing here momentarily, and I'm just going to kind of give you the wind to cut off, because that's like a five-minute segment. We're not going to do the whole thing. But, JP, if you're good on that, let's go ahead and play this.
As an American Jew,
okay, stop.
How can you continue to conduct...
I should have led off with, this is the liberal progressive kid on campus asking Ben Shapiro a question, to which Ben then responds. Go ahead.
As an American Jew, how can you continue to condone the actions of the Israeli government, condoned by the U.S. government, in the Gaza Strip, where over 40,000 people have died, including Palestinians and Israelis, in large numbers of children and civilians? How can you continue to condone those actions?
Okay, hold on. I want to correct you. I don't just condone the actions of the Israeli Defense Force and the Israeli government. I celebrate and laud them. I'm not morally apathetic about what's happening. On October 7th, Hamas launched the most deadly war on Jews since the Holocaust. They killed 1,200 innocent people. They took 250 hostages. 100 of them are still being held hostage. I know members of families of hostages who are still being held, American citizens. Hamas could end this war today by surrendering. They've chosen not to surrender. Instead, they spend billions of dollars building terror tunnels below civilian areas. It is not incumbent on the Israeli government to surrender just because terrorists are evil enough to hide behind civilians. The Israeli government has gone through such extraordinary efforts not to kill civilians that it has managed the best civilian to terrorist kill ratio in the history of urban warfare, and it is not close. I personally know soldiers who have gone door to door in the Gaza Strip who have risked their own lives to prevent civilian death. Israel has complete and utter air superiority over the Gaza Strip. Turns out that Hamas doesn't have an air force. They just had a series of tunnels where they hid all their leadership while their people suffered after their people voted for them, and then they effectively established a dictatorship over the course of the last 20 years. Israel, with their complete air superiority, certainly would have had the ability to commit full-scale human atrocities had they wanted to. They have complete air superiority. They could have used F-35s and simply turned the place into a parking lot. They did not, in fact, do that. They moved vast scales of population. In fact, believe it or not, there have been more births in the Gaza Strip since the beginning of this war than there have been deaths in the Gaza Strip from the war itself. That is a very poor way to conduct a genocide.
All right, stop there. He makes his point so well. What I appreciated, though, was he started off by saying, I don't just condone it. I celebrate and laud it. So first of all, good on him. But my point is this. You heard the question up front. How can you, practicing Jew in America, possibly support? Well, that's what Israel's facing right now. They are facing a constant leftist assault on their willingness to, on their ability to stand and be willing to fight for their survival. And it shouldn't have to be that way. I mean, you look at it and go, it's just common sense, y'all. They were the ones who were attacked. They were the ones who had babies beheaded and people raped and thousands of people killed and 250 of them taken hostage. And yet Macron's going to say they're not allowed to come to a major defense expo. And libs on campus like that young skull full of mush that asked Ben Shapiro a question a moment ago are implying that somehow Israel is genocidal. When he makes a point, Israel could have already flattened Gaza Strip if it wanted to. If it really wanted to, there would be nothing left of Gaza. They could have cracked it off and let it float off into the sea. But they didn't. And they won't. Why? Because they're doing what they can to mitigate, but they can't mitigate everything. But they're also not going to surrender just because liberals on a college campus somewhere said, please stop. So the sentiments are out there. Israel's dealing with this. But when we get back from this break, one of the most galling things I think has happened yet is the fact that we had a major leak of classified information, and it came from the U.S. that undermines Israel's capabilities. We'll talk about what that means and how it happened and maybe even who did it when we get back from this break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right, and we will be back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Raven from Russellville just checked in. Raven, I hadn't heard from you in a while. Glad you're back. He says, what we should do is tell Macron the next time the French get their butts in a sling, we just won't be there. I mean, how many times? Jim from Grove Oaks says, hey, Colonel, in regard to the fact that Israel's on par with the U.S., didn't the FBI go to the Israelis to crack open the phone of Trump's first shooter? I don't know that for a fact. If you have a story on that, I'd like to see it. That's interesting. Marie from Madison says, while many Christians, including me, support Israel, the leadership of this administration has proven they are no friend of Israel. Are we really supposed to believe, as Biden claims, that they're going to, quote, thoroughly investigate the classified document leak when we still don't know who left the cocaine in the White House or who leaked the SCOTUS-Dobbs decision prematurely? Marie, I think you just did my entire segment for me. She is not wrong. So, yes, exactly. In case you have not heard, what just happened in the last few days should be having alarm bells ringing all over the world in the intelligence sector. There's a variety of reasons why it could have happened. But there was an unauthorized release of top secret documents related to Israel's planned counterattacks against Iran. You may recall that just in recent weeks again, Iran has launched ballistic missiles against Israel. They did it also back in, I think it was April, launching a ballistic missile, not just like using its proxies, the Houthis or Hezbollah or Hamas. They're literally launching ballistic missiles nation on nation. You know Iran is wondering when the counterattack is going to happen, because Israel does not just sit still and go, well, you know, that occurred. No, Israel, and by the way, Israel plays chess while other people play checkers. And Israel also plays the long game. They're willing to hunt. They're willing to go places that people say they can't go. If you look at what happened with the pagers exploding, I mean, that was an epic piece of quiet industrial espionage that gave them access to a device that they were probably the ones that sort of secretly convinced Hezbollah, it'd be great if you carried pagers, wouldn't it? Yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll carry a pager. They'll never find us now. That's analog. That's not digital. This is cool. And then the signal gets sent. Boom. They start blowing up. Well, Israel just had plans divulged. Documents attributed to the U.S. Geospatial Intelligence Agency and National Security Agency note that Israel was moving military assets into place to conduct a military strike in response to Iran's ballistic missile attacks. Story here on Fox News, Dateline 2 days ago. The documents, which were marked as top secret, were actually posted to the Telegram messaging app. It's a like Signal and other messaging apps you can use to communicate back and forth. It was first reported by CNN and Axios. The AP did a follow-up story on it, citing three U.S. officials and then later a fourth official, all of whom confirmed that the documents do appear to be legitimate. House Speaker Mike Johnson is now confirming there's an investigation in an interview he did on CNN. He said the leak is very concerning. There's some serious allegations being made. There's an investigation underway. I'll get a classified briefing on that in a couple hours. That was on Sunday. The investigation is examining how the documents were obtained, including whether it was an intentional leak by a member of U.S. intelligence or by another method. Now, let's talk about the whys, and then we'll talk about the whats, all right? Who leaked this? What possible reasons could there be? The only good reason it could be, and John C. from Madison just texted, and I just looked up and actually saw it. He says, Israel plays 3D chess while everybody else plays checkers. Yeah. Fair point. One of the reasons why it could be is disinformation on the part of Israel itself. So I will say that. There's a potential here that this is a PSYOP campaign and that Israel basically staged it in such a way so that Iran sees it and doesn't know whether it's real or not. But that's only one of the multiple reasons why it could have been leaked. First theory, I got a piece here I pulled off a website called Responsible Statecraft. The first theory is that the Iranians actually hacked our U.S. intel services and leaked it themselves to show Israel they know what's up. Okay. Possible. That's very concerning. If Iran can hack our systems, not good. Number two, another reason could have been that within the U.S. government, the investigation itself is going to find that there was a bad actor in the U.S. government who is favorable to Iran. Not good. Number three, the Biden administration may have orchestrated the leak itself in order to help delay the Israeli attack while they try to encourage Israel to do things they want done in the realm of you know, ceasefires and hostage negotiations. And number four, like I said, the Israelis could have leaked it themselves. And then the last one they say is the U.S. investigation is looking at outside actors. Could it have been one of the Five Eyes? So this document that we have, this top secret document, was authorized for viewing by what's known as the Five Eyes. If you're not familiar with the Five Eyes, it's the top five intelligence eye, the intelligence agencies from the top five allies, U.S., Great Britain, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. Those five have, they're called the Five Eyes. They have agreements on sharing of intel. The Five Eyes, I don't know. I mean, France is not in there, but is it possible that someone in the Five Eyes actually did it? I don't know. But the reality is this, it happened. It happened, and it's not good. The Pentagon is now investigating. Story from the New York Post. The Pentagon's investigating whether the leaked Israeli plans for Iran came from a hacker from insiders. So the Pentagon's all in on this. They want to know how this happened, and they should. I mean, are they playing games? Is this puffery? I don't know. But the reality is the Pentagon is now investigating. But right now, analysts are saying that if this leak occurred from the U.S. side, it appears that it may well have come through a Biden appointee. Not a good one. One that you look at and go, why do you have this job? I'll tell you more about that when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I am talking about Alabama. And y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Let me go to the phones real quick. It's on topic, I believe, so I'll grab that since he held on during the break. Mike from Huntsville. Mike, how you doing?
I'm good, Phil. Appreciate it, Colonel. One of the things that I wanted to mention is back in the 90s and early part of 2000 in the Obama administration, Valerie Jarrett was instrumental in helping with the Arab Spring. And it was also connected with the Iranians. You had six Muslim Brotherhood members on Obama's staff. You had John Brennan in 1994 converted to Islam, and he converted to a Sunni Wahhabi religion in 94. You can look it up. Even the fact checkers can't deny it. But what I'm saying is that they packed the CIA totally with Muslim Brotherhood people. There's a fusion in the CIA right now between Muslims and Christians. And, you know, the CIA used to stand for Christians in Action, if you remember that. But the so that's what's happening right now. You have Islam takes priority over the Constitution or any other oath of the people that are in there. So they know who the bad guys are. They just have to, you know, admit it, and they aren't going to do it.
Well,
in fact,
one thing is absolutely sure, Mike, is that the Biden administration took a lesson from the Obamas about appointing all the wrong people to the right jobs. They're notorious
they
for that.
But the problem is it ignorance or is it evil? And obviously, what's going on right now, no one is as stupid as this group of people.
I completely agree. Great call, Mike. And thanks for reminding me of Valerie Jarrett. That was a good call. You're right. That's the kind of thing we're looking at right now.
Absolutely. That's what you have. You have totally people packed that have loyalty to other allegiances other than the United States.
Good call, Mike. Thanks so much. Appreciate you. And let me just spin right off what he just said. Speaking of having the allegiances in the wrong place, so something that if I knew this, I'd forgotten about it. As much as I steep myself in all the resources for this show, I do not recall that last year we had a We had a scandal in the a scandal in the Biden administration about a guy named Robert Malley. Now, these documents that have been leaked, Israel is upset. They say they are. We're going to assume, let's assume for good measure that Israel did not do this leaking as part of a PSYOP campaign. The documents that we're talking about got leaked. They show an alleged summary of, you know, U.S. spy satellites, Israeli military moving things into place, moving munitions, doing more than just exercises. They were actually getting ready for a potential strike. The Israeli Air Force moving its assets. All that to say, Daily Wire has a piece that talks about it, and it reminds me of this past year, 2023, top Republicans revealed that the Biden-Harris administration, they had a special envoy to Iran who was put out on administrative leave without pay, I believe, for violations of his top secret clearance. His name's Robert Malley. He was a special envoy to Iran, and it was revealed in a Tablet magazine article last year that he had allegedly transferred classified material to his personal email and his cell phone, which were then stolen by another hostile foreign actor. All right, so what we're looking at here is it was probably Iran. He had Iranian sympathies. The FBI's criminal investigation came to light really last summer. But the Senate Foreign Relations and the House Foreign Affairs Committees, both controlled with Republican ranking members, are being stonewalled by the Department of State. Go figure. Antony Blinken won't tell them what's going on. So we're finding out now, well after the fact, that we got a guy named Robert Malley who was accused of misappropriation of documents of a TS level that were then stolen off of his unsecured devices where they shouldn't have been in the first place, probably by Iran. And then, oh, by the way, let's don't forget this. Malley was accused, according to this article I got from Daily Wire, was accused in the Tablet report of advancing several operatives in what became known as a suspected Iranian spy ring inside the U.S. government. This is a story on Daily Wire, including helping an alleged Iranian asset named Ariana Tabatabai, I think it's how it's pronounced, infiltrate her way into some of the most sensitive positions in U.S. government, including the State Department and the Pentagon. Ariana Tabatabai, keep that in mind. Ariana Tabatabai, is she still out there? Does she still have a job? Why, yes, she's still out there. How does this happen? How do we have people in positions of top secret clearances in the Biden administration that have no reason in the world to be appointed to these positions, and then they don't get rid of them? Worse than Malley's appointment, I got this piece off the National Review, Dateline today. Headline says, the Biden-Iran scandal gets worse. Says a source of last week's leak of U.S. intelligence about Israel's plan to strike Iran has occasioned an investigation, but the source is not yet known. What should be obvious, though, is that no individual who has had extensive contact with Iranian intelligence and diplomatic officials and who has deferred to the direction of those officials should have ever been in a sensitive position in the first place. What they're saying there is if you're someone who has sympathies to one of our bad actors in the world and that when those bad actors tell you to do stuff, you do it, you shouldn't then be in a position of having access to information about them as a part of your top secret clearance in the military. Pray tell, Phil, what are you talking about? Ariana Tabatabai. Ariana Tabatabai is an academic, worked in the State Department, appointed by that guy, Robert Malley. She was a part of what was now known as the Iran Experts Initiative. She basically was an Iranian sympathizer, appointed to a TS-level position in the Department of State and then the Pentagon. A program, by the way, that was used by Tehran's Ministry of Foreign Affairs to cultivate relationships with academics. Oh, pray tell. At one point, it says, she actually opted to skip going to a conference in Israel because an Iranian official told her not to go. How does that work? She also consulted with that same Iranian official regarding how she should testify in hearings before Congress. How does that work? Her job today? She's chief of staff to the Pentagon official who oversees U.S. special operations. She's chief of staff to the Undersecretary for SOLIC, Special Operations and Low Intensity Conflict. That's all of the SEALs, the Rangers, the Green Berets, Air Force Special Ops, all of it. The Undersecretary of Defense for SOLIC has a chief of staff who is known as an Iranian sympathizer who in the past has actually not gone places because Iran has asked her not to go.
What?
Yes. The leak of documents from the National Security Agency and the National Geospatial and Intel Agency could have come from any number of places. This article doesn't say she's the one who did it. But this article certainly points out she shouldn't be in the job she has because we're dealing with leaks from someone who sympathized with Iran. And for reasons we cannot even fathom, people like Robert Malley, people like Ariana Tabatabai, have been given positions of great authority and classified nature, and they have no business having those jobs.
Well, I'll add this possibility in there, too. If you remember earlier this year, Ukrainian battle plans leaked out from somebody with clearance who just did it to look cool with his buddies on Discord.
That was that young kid, the Air Force guy.
Yeah, which honestly, when I saw this story, that was kind of the first possibility that came in my mind, is somebody with clearance being stupid and linking it. But then the second possibility in my mind was somebody within the Biden administration is angry that Israel's not listening to them and trying to blackmail them and, you know, get in their way and cause a speed bump and force them to listen to us. But I feel like that's another possibility, too, of it could just be somebody in there that is being stupid and leaking stuff, but not saying that stuff isn't there. You know, Iranian-friendly people in the administration, unfortunately, I'm not saying those aren't there, but I'm just adding a, you know, possibility of somebody in there that was being stupid.
And this is what happens when you have DEI hires in positions they shouldn't be. You know, when you forget merit, when you forget loyalty, when you forget your oath, and you're all about breaking glass ceilings, all you wind up doing is breaking down our alliances and our national security. And we're seeing that right now. Yeah, that young kid, by the way, I think I want to say his trial's coming up right now. But what a goober.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you. I said this back then, too. He was wrong. He deserves his punishment. But I want to know who his supervisors were. I want to know who his boss was. I want to know that heads rolled because this kid was operating in a SCIF, a secure facility, and had no business doing the things he was able to do and getting away with it because somebody was not paying attention and was giving him opportunities he never should have had.
Yeah.
Just saying.
It's causing our allies to lose trust in us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll take a couple of text messages and we'll jump into a break. Gary from Decatur says, apparently Washington, D.C. and the Biden administration don't consider spying a threat to national security. They allowed Dianne Feinstein and Swalwell to stay in office after they were exposed for having a spy for a chauffeur or a girlfriend while on the House Intel Committee. Yep, there's that. And they're leakers par excellence. Paul from Huntsville says, we know we have people in our government who are either sympathetic toward Iran or anti-Israel or both. They've been elected to office. Ilhan Omar. And then his text cut off, so I don't know what else he was trying to say. But
I'm assuming he was going to say Tlaib, considering there's a T there.
Yeah, Rashida Tlaib. John from Lexington, South Carolina says, primary and only oil terminal is Karg Island at 1.5 million barrels a day. Shame if something were to happen to it. No way around it, brother. That's how they get their money to support terrorism. There's always, too, the nuclear facility at Natanz. That thing needs to go away sometime soon. Dave from Madison, didn't we used to execute spies? Yeah, but you got to catch them first. So I hope we catch them soon. And then Raven from Russellville says, does our oath to the Constitution mean nothing anymore? Evidently not in the Biden-Harris administration. Yeah, there's that. Listen, we're going to wind up taking a break right now. So we'll take that break. We'll come right back. We'll put a wrap on this thing. Put a wrap on the day, actually. I'm still thinking about McDonald's fries. I'll be honest with you. Woo! And Ocasio-Cortez doesn't like the fact that Trump put on a McDonald's costume, she calls it. You know what? Who cares what she thinks? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. Danny from Penhook checked in. He said, one thing for sure, if Biden-Harris administration is responsible for the Israeli leak, the American citizens will never know if Trump doesn't win. That's a great point, man. There's a lot of things I think we'll never know if Trump doesn't win. All the more reason for Trump to win. Let me jump over here to the phones. I do believe we have Jeff Rowe from Indiana on the line. Jeff, man, how you doing?
I'm almost out of the gauntlet, man. I almost see the opening.
Nice. We're making good time today. It's a beautiful day for a drive right now.
Oh, yeah. Good day to be off tomorrow, too.
There you go. Well, what do you think about all this Israel leak stuff, man?
You know, I wish we could keep things as quiet as the Jeffrey Epstein list and everything, you know. It seems to me if it's to do anything about powerful people and sex, you know, you'll never hear another word about it. But just since we're this in Israel and everything, you know, they can just go out there and shout it off the rooftops and everything. And we're looking like the fool because no one will trust the United States to tell them. Why Israel would tell us anything, I have no clue.
Yeah, you're right. The top secret clearance needs to be about as secure as a transgender manifesto. I mean, it just needs to get locked away hard, but they can't seem to do it. You're right.
Well, speaking of transgender, how about Chelsea Manning or Chelsea Bradley Manning or whatever it is now? You know. All the stuff that they leaked out and everything. Why are they still breathing? You know, we used to execute spies. You know, the Rosenbergs and everything. I don't think they lasted too long, and they were just putting some information out, and they got zapped because of it. I think we need to start tying some of these leakers up to the posts and putting about 5 shells through their.
Well, you know the problem they've got with that. The problem they've got with that is that they start enforcing that treason punishment. Then they got to go back and take a real hard look again at the Hillary Clinton email scandals because she got away at the same time Hillary was bleaching her personal hard drives to make sure that all the classified documents didn't get seen. You had a young guy who was a submariner based out of Norfolk, I believe. Who just took pictures of where he was proud to work and didn't know he was in a secure environment where he shouldn't have done it, and he got punished severely. I mean, he lost his career. He went to jail. Classified documents, you can't do that. And she's doing it left and right.
Yeah, imagine that. You think there's two tiers of justice system in this country, Phil?
Well, it's called the Democrat-Republican.
Yeah. But seriously, we need until we start punishing people and put some teeth into this, it's just going to keep happening because there's it's like you say with Hillary, there's no repercussion of anything they do wrong. We the people need to start holding these people accountable.
I completely agree.
Yeah, we the people need to come out and let these judges and prosecutors know that you're going to do something or we're going to get rid of you. They need to be taken out as far, politically, I guess you'd say. Not physically, but politically, they need to be gone.
They absolutely need to be gone, and some of them never should have had their job in the first place is what it boils down to. Stop hiring on DEI and get back to merit, and I think we'll be a lot better off. All right, man, I got to clean up a few text messages and close out some stuff here, brother. You be safe on the road, all right?
Have a good one, Phil.
All right, we'll see you, man. Brian from Huntsville checks in. He wants John from Huntsville, the grader, he says, to let him know, is Rocket City Redneck still in first place for the football pick'ems? And so we don't know. Speaking of which, John from Huntsville, the grades are in, and I didn't do well today.
Mm.
How, pray tell, could this be? He says, Phil gets a B- for suggesting that Taco Tuesday should become Tater Tot Tuesday. I didn't say Tater Tot Tuesday.
It's a Tater Tuesday.
I said Tater Tuesday.
That's all forms of tater. French fries, baked potatoes, sweet potatoes.
But especially big stuffed potatoes.
Yes.
Just saying. Okay, fine. I'll take my lumps. Which means today's winner is obviously JP with Out of This World A Triple Plus for the beautiful display of perfection. Congratulations, you're the king of Gen Z.
The king of Gen Z.
We got no grade there for our guest today. John, you're grading today. You're being very arbitrary.
I need to get that on nameplate.
We had
king
Nick
of Gen Z.
It's king of Gen Z. There you go. I've got my nameplate over here. We need one for you that says king of Gen Z. What else we got? Scroll down here. Some that I didn't get from before. Mark from Tony says, Mark from Tony, your text got cut off, so I can't even tell what it's supposed to say.
There's like four of them.
It's like it comes in. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. Mark, thanks for texting in. I don't know what it says.
Something about the Democrats stealing the election.
Yeah, I'm sure. Terry from Hartzell says, if American intelligence can't figure out Who brought cocaine to the White House? What makes us think they can figure out who leaked Israeli intelligence? That's the second person to get that same marker, and that's pretty fair. Jay from Hartsell, Joe probably left plans for Iran's attack by his Corvette. Yeah, stacked in the garage next to his green Corvette. Absolutely. Jason from Huntsville says, it's Canada. It's always Canada and that tart Justin Trudeau. Calls him a tart.
I think that's a bit too kind.
And then one of the other Johns from Huntsville, J-O-N, John, says, I think you read a report mentioning, quote, the U.S. Geospatial Intelligence Agency. I don't know who leaked the info, but I'm pretty sure the U.S. government agency that was being referred to by the wrong name was actually the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Okay, John, thanks so much. Either way, it's bad. All right, listen, bottom line is this, you guys. There are more of us than there are of them. I mean it. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.